With support from Verde Gallery, currently showing Persephone and Flora, a celebration of spring, featuring the paintings of Jenny Chi and floral art by Rick Orr. Verde Gallery features a fine art gallery, cafe, and newsroom at 17 East Taylor in downtown Champaign. Be inspired. Today's broadcast is made possible in part by Euromart International Food Store on Springfield and Locust in Champaign, offering Baltic bakery bread, caviar, and baklava. The Euromart hosts a cheese and olive tasting from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Thursday, Friday, and Saturday.
You're tuned to the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580. Good afternoon, I'm Celeste Quinn. It's the first Friday of the month, the day we talk about dogs, dog care, dog behavior, dog training. With us this afternoon, Jim Keel and Robin Haggard. They're with the Dog Training Club of Champaign-Urbana, and they also raise Malamutes. Listeners, if you'd like to join us this afternoon with questions, comments, well, just give us a telephone call. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, call toll-free, 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. Carol Lindholm has the day off. She's on her way to a show, right?
In St. Louis.
St. Louis with her golden Robbie.
A specialty, a golden retriever specialty.
Thanks
in
for
St.
joining
Louis.
Us. Yeah. Thanks for joining us this afternoon.
Just landed. Yeah, sorry.
There's a delay there.
Yeah. Oh, I'm here to meet the challenges of a new era. I've been emailing the morons at National Public Radio about the firing of Bob Edwards, and that was so. Hey, Bob and Robin and I are the same age. I was worried we'd get fired here, you know.
No. Well, now I know how old you are.
Yeah. Mm. How old are we? We're old. We're old people.
Well, I'm old too, so, you know, I guess I'm on the cusp.
Yeah, you got to watch out. Lose your job.
Well, I wanted to talk about puppies today.
Oh, puppies, right. Sorry.
And Robin mentioned that you have one puppy.
Yeah. A litter of one.
A lit. Mm-hmm. She said.
Yeah. We've had, tell us about this. As a matter of fact, we've had litters with every number of dogs from 1 to 16.
Wow.
Probably.
And this one had a lot of room then.
Yeah. This is the first singleton we've had in over 30 years.
Oh, yeah.
But she.
No stillbirths, no. It was just one puppy.
We ultrasounded her when she was about 4 weeks along and showed one puppy. And we x-rayed her when she was about 5 days from her first due date just to see. And there was one. So we were pretty sure we were only having one.
Yeah.
And that's what happened. We were lucky that she was able to go into labor normally and have the puppy normally because it's a big puppy. It was 1 pound, 13 ounces. And a lot of times when they only have one, they don't have enough hormones to keep the whelping process going. So then they have to go into the vets and have a C-section or something like that. So we were lucky she did it on her own.
That's a good thing that those are pretty rare then too, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's very good.
Outside of size, is there any difference in a puppy that's part of a very small litter or a litter of one as opposed to a litter of many?
Her mother keeps bringing her toys, and we figured that that probably meant that she thought she needed companions in the litter box. So the first week, I think Jamie brought her a new stuffed toy every day and would set it in the box so that she could snuggle up against the stuffed toys. But other than that, we have to make sure she doesn't get too fat and make sure that Jamie, the mother, doesn't get mastitis because with only one puppy, if she overproduces milk, then she could have problems with that. But so far, the puppy's 2 weeks old and knock on wood, everything's going fine.
Very good. When does a puppy's personality begin to emerge?
Actually, right away. But some puppies, when you pick them up, they'll go stiff. They'll start jerking around if you pet them.
This is at a day old.
Yeah, they can sometimes have very negative reactions to touch, and so you know that their nerves are a little more sensitive at that stage. And in a litter, they'll start manifesting who's dominant right away. The more dominant puppies get the choicer nipples and so forth. So they, in a litter, they definitely demonstrate that right away.
If you've got a puppy that is, you know, pulling away or tightening up, you've got to work with that little guy.
Exactly.
In order to bring it out,
right.
But you don't want to be overly aggressive on that. How do you how do you keep it in balance?
Just try to pick them up every day, and I like to put them on their backs and stroke, rub their tummies, and just get them used to feeling confident in my arms in a less than standard position, so that they get used to that. And usually, you can work them through that, but it's part of the socializing process. They need to be stimulated every day. There's a book called Super Puppy by who's the guy that wrote Understanding Your Dog?
Fox.
Fox, by Michael Fox. And he talks about taking in a litter of puppies, you take one puppy away from the litter at a time and set it by itself for a few minutes so that it gets used to being alone, and it's stressed a little bit by that. And a little bit of stress on a very young puppy is a good thing. It helps develop their neurological system, their brain. So you can enhance the dog by stimulating it in those ways. So we try to do those sorts of things.
Daniel Pinkwater and his wife also wrote a book called Super Puppy. So we don't want people to get confused.
Yeah.
So buy a book.
Two different
Super Puppy,
two
and
different
it's
super
not
puppies.
By Michael J. Fox.
Right.
Michael J. Fox. Not the Michael J. Fox.
I don't think his middle name's J.
No.
Or middle initial.
Not the movie star, the television star.
No.
Michael Fox.
Dr. Michael Fox.
Daniel Pinkwater.
Animal behaviorist, and he's now, or he was recently, president of the
Michael J. Fox Fan Club.
Humane Society.
HSUS?
HSUS.
No. Was it?
I think so.
We've got a listener waiting to talk with us, so put on your headphones, and we'll go and talk with our caller, who's waiting for us in Danville on line 4. Hi.
Hello. Good afternoon. I'm going to have a stroke if I don't ask this question.
Ask away, quick.
The lady made a remark about pecking order puppies and pecking order, and how the dominant puppy will take on the
best nipple or the most advantageous nursing spot.
How do you figure that out?
Well, typically the back nipples are considered those that are the best. In different females, it could be different, but people who've done studies have noticed that the dominant puppies will gravitate towards the same nipples, and they'll knock the other puppies off those nipples if they're occupied. So they have actually focused on the fact that in a litter, puppies will go towards the same nipple each time they feed. So once they establish an order, the puppies will continually go to the same nipples to nurse.
Oh, it doesn't have to be the same nipple, but just the nipple the puppy prefers.
Or or if it's in a larger litter, the one that it's if its other litter mates are more dominant, then they may have relegated that puppy to the least productive nipple.
Okay, all right. So. All right. Well, thank you very much.
Sure.
Bye.
Thanks for the call this afternoon.
I hope the FCC people aren't listening in, because we're using a lot of dirty words here.
Wardrobe malfunction here.
I don't want to go to jail. Again, I don't want to go to jail.
This is the Afternoon Magazine, and it's the first Friday of the month, the day of the month that we talk about dogs. And with us this afternoon are Jim Keel and Robin Haggard of the Dog Training Club of Champaign-Urbana. They also happen to raise Malamutes. And listeners, you can join us with questions about puppies, about dogs, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, call toll-free, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL.
We have to mention Vet Med Open House, or many people will be angry with us.
Okay, well, mention away.
I think the veterinarian who was on earlier in the week talked about it, but tomorrow morning, the veterinary medicine school, is that what it's called? and the Animal Sciences Department are putting on what's called a Vet Med Open House, and people are invited to go to those two facilities, which are on South Lincoln Avenue, I think starting around 9 o'clock in the morning, maybe earlier. But the Dog Training Club is going to put on a demonstration between the two buildings, I think just north of the vet clinic, starting at 9 or 9:30. Oops, Lisa's going to be mad at me because I think it's 9:30.
Okay.
9:30. And we're going to put on a weight pull demonstration from yours truly, agility, fly ball, and obedience. And I think that's it, right?
I think so.
But besides us, there are other reasons to come besides seeing the Dog Training Club. And that would be the Vet Med building is opened up, and they're showing off all their equipment and those kinds of things. It's always a big event, and we'll be there. And you should be there, too.
Okay.
And the Dog Training Club also is sponsoring a tracking trial on Sunday at
Kennicott Cove
over near Danville. This is a trial for dogs who are trained to track human scent and find an article at the end of that track. And it's a AKC-sponsored title. And it's really fun. It's one of the most fun sports that you can do with your dog, and it's all positive training. And if you wanted to see dogs tracking on Sunday morning, it's an event that takes a lot of time, so there's only a limited number of entries. There's only probably 12 or 14 entries. I can't remember how many we took. But it's a lot of fun, and it's neat to watch the dogs follow a 500-yard trail and find the article at the end. It's really neat.
We have a listener waiting to talk with us in Champaign on line one. Hi.
Hello, this is Lisa from the Dog Training Club.
I knew I'd get it wrong.
We start at 10:30.
10:30.
10:30 to 12:30.
Well, if people got there early, see, that would be better. I always tell Robin everything's an hour earlier than it is, otherwise we'd never get anywhere.
I know. My husband does the same thing to me, though I've got that one figured out also now. But just to let everybody know, your description was terrific, but we'll just be starting at 10:30.
I don't have to get up so early then. Great.
No. But we're looking forward to you. I mean, the white pools, people are really excited about.
All people are coming from Europe to see this. I mean, it's a big event.
Well, thank you very much.
Thanks
bye
for
bye.
The call. Thanks
I,
for the
I knew I'd mess
the
it
information.
Up.
Yeah, 10:30 tomorrow morning. When does the open house
itself? The open house starts, I think, at 8.
At 8? Okay. All right, very good.
But I was wrong about the other thing, so.
333-9455, 800-222-9455. Questions about dogs? Welcome this afternoon here on the Afternoon Magazine. Dog care, dog training, and dog...
Stuff.
Dog behavior.
There's also another event coming up a little later in April at the fairgrounds that's sponsored by our club, and that's an agility trial,
Trial,
yeah, it is called a trial.
There are shows, there are trials, and there are tests.
Tests, yes. And it's, in fact, the tracking is a test.
Mm-hmm.
But the agility trial is April 24th and 25th at the Champaign County Fairgrounds, and it's just a lot of fun to watch, a lot of activity. It's a great thing for kids to go watch because they can see the dogs doing a lot of action-packed things, and so it's very visual, and you can kind of get right in and and watch. And
you can't get in the ring.
No, but get very close and talk to the people about agility, and it's just a fun sport.
Yeah. Now, last time we did the program, Carol was here, and we got a call from a listener whose daughter wanted a dog. Remember, Jim?
No.
Okay. Well, as I recall, daughter wanted a dog, and Jim and Carol advised them to, you know, just get out to events and get out and talk with dog owners and dog trainers and find out, you know, what a particular breed is like, and talk with folks in the know. Would you have any other advice, Robin? Anything, Dan?
There's books you can get out of the library. There's websites you can go to check out different breeds, but really hands-on and talking to the breeders is the best way to learn about a breed. And if you only hear glowing things about the breed, go talk to more people or read more books, because every breed has things about it that are not ideal. And there's no perfect dog for any particular person, so you kind of have to find the breed that fits you and what you like to do. You know, if you're a person that has an apartment and doesn't like to walk, don't get a border collie. I mean, just sensible,
right,
bottom line sorts of things. No matter how pretty the dog is or how attractive it looks, it's the temperament and the health of the animal that you
need to be most concerned about. With breeds, you can predict their temperament with some accuracy, but every dog is different. And there are golden retrievers that aren't that smart. I've seen a couple.
Mm-hmm.
And
they can be dog aggressive.
And there are Malamutes that are smart. I actually saw one out east. So, you know, it's like, somebody mentions a breed. Well, they're like this. Well, generally speaking, they are, but... When you get a dog, you're not getting the breed, you're getting that dog. And that dog may have its own problems or its own virtues. And there's just no way to tell till you see it.
Okay. And I highly recommend talking to the rescue people in a breed, too, before you get into a breed.
Oh, what a good idea.
Once you have narrowed your choices down, then talk to rescue groups, because they can often tell you more things about the characteristics of the breed and the things you need to look for, even if you're just getting a puppy. But they also have usually young adults that are nice dogs that have been checked out by those rescues. And so they know that they're good-tempered animals of that breed, because rescues are very cognizant of behavior and temperament.
Let's talk with another listener. I'm told that an old friend of the show is calling in on line one. Hello.
Well, not old. Let's just call it friend of the show.
Well, a long time.
No, I'd
friend.
Say old.
Oh, this is a disgruntled golden retriever owner calling in, too. I heard those slams.
What? I said occasionally you run into a dumb golden. Most of them are smart.
You know how blondes are smart. Hey, I don't know if you rectified this or not during the course of your conversation, but the dog training club is on at 10:30 tomorrow morning.
Lisa was kind enough to call and let us know.
There are probably a million fingers flying.
This isn't a radio show anymore. It's a conference call of the dog training club.
Actually, you know, we won't throw this out for a thought, but the Robin and Carol show sounds pretty good to me.
See, I knew if I criticized NPR, I was going to lose my job.
Well, then we'll just move you on to senior correspondent.
I'll be a senior correspondent. You'll never hear from me again.
Well, I'll let you guys go on my way to St. Louis to a golden retriever specialty with my smart golden retriever.
Go, Robbie.
Yes, and I'll talk to you guys next week. Thanks.
Okay, best of luck, Carol.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Now let's talk with... Now, we were going to go to another call, but I guess something happened and that person isn't going to join us this afternoon. But let's invite others to join us this afternoon. Questions, comments about dogs, dog training, dog behavior, dog care, give us a call. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll free, 800-222-9455. 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. What do you do, back to puppies, what do you do to help people find the right match among the litter of your pups?
Well, we do a puppy personality test on all of our puppies when they're 7 weeks. It's a test we've been using since 1978 or so.
It's part written, part oral.
And
they're very smart, those males.
Oh, they're
running them down.
In 7 weeks,
ago.
They are. Yeah.
And that helps us determine whether they're a tough dog or a dominant dog or a very submissive dog. Just kind of get a general personality profile in the puppy, and then try to match that with the people who are interested in getting a puppy, so that we try not to put a dominant dog with a very, you know, soft family, with people who have little children, things like that. Sometimes you make mistakes, but for the most part, we've had good luck at placing the dogs with people who match them personality-wise.
Let's talk with another listener. Caller in Lake Village, Indiana, line one. Go ahead.
Hi, I would like to know if any of your guests know anything about Cocker Rage Syndrome.
No. I know of Springer Rage. I wonder if that's the same thing.
I don't know. What's that? Maybe you can explain that.
Allegedly, Springer Spaniels, some Springer Spaniels have a problem where for what apparently is no reason, they become aggressive or angry or bark a lot and snap a lot. And they call it Springer Rage. But I've never heard of Cocker Rage.
Okay.
Have you?
Well, it sounds pretty similar from what I've heard.
I always suspect when if you have a sudden and unexplained change in the temperament of your dog that there's some medical problem that isn't, is it obvious? And obviously, we had a friend that had a dog that was a big winning dog in its breed and a very nice dog. And suddenly it started snapping at people and they euthanized it and did a post on it and found that the dog had brain lesions associated with distemper. And what they thought was that the mother had a very, very, very mild case of distempers, one that you couldn't even notice, while she was having the puppies, and it affected the... she was carrying the puppies, and it affected the nerve development of the puppies. And that kind of thing doesn't really manifest itself for several years in a dog. It could be something like that, parasites, infections, all kinds of things. But I don't think there's a breed characteristic, that's handed down from generation to generation that causes a dog to suddenly go into a rage. I think it's more immediate and more medical.
I don't think they found a heritable in the Springer Rage Syndrome that they call it. I don't think they found that there's a particular gene or a heritable trait, at least not that I've read.
Yeah. I went to the web, and there's a Rage Syndrome Information Center, and at the top here it says many dogs are inappropriately punished, leading to rage.
And that could be, there again, it's some of the things that they call rage could be things that are slow in coming that the owner doesn't recognize until it manifests itself in a confrontation. And a lot of times, in Malamutes anyway, and I know in other breeds it happens the same way, the people, when they're raising the puppy, they let it get away with murder because it's cute and it's a puppy and, it'll be better when it's an adult. Well, that doesn't happen. And the day you say to the dog, no, you can't do this, you can't get on the couch today or whatever, that's the day the dog turns and says, want to bet? And then the people are like, oh, so surprised that little, sweetie pie is suddenly baring its teeth. And it was coming all along, but they didn't recognize the fact that it was coming.
Sneaked up on them.
Yeah.
Let's talk with another listener. Well, let's go back to that caller on line one. Does that answer?
Is he still here?
Answer your question.
Oh, okay.
Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Do you have a dog with that problem?
Well, I have a rescued Cocker Spaniel that's real aggressive, and he's not recommended for a home with young children. And I find when somebody comes over to my house that he is pretty aggressive, and I have to put him on a leash. And somebody said there is this Cocker Rage Syndrome, but then another person told me the syndrome is when the dog, for no reason, attacks his owners. That's one of the syndromes.
Well, it's not necessarily that they attack their owners. They attack whoever happens to be near, and, of course, the owners are generally near the dog, as a rule. Somebody coming over to the house and the dog becoming aggressive is not necessarily rage. Rage is what appears to be unmotivated, uncaused, aggressive behavior. The dog is sitting there being nice and suddenly it's being vicious. If you have a dog, a normal dog, and somebody knocks on the door and they run to the door barking, that's pretty normal. That's not rage.
I agree. Yeah, I agree with that.
That's not rage at all.
And if the dog has an inappropriate reaction, in other words, it's too aggressive at the door when you have guests, obedience training a lot of times will really help with that. Teaching the dog to do a sit-stay after the you greet the guests, you know, and then slowly letting the dog be introduced to the guests, knowing that they're okay. Because some dogs are just very protective and very territorial, and that manifests itself usually when someone's coming to your home.
Well, thank you very much.
Sure.
Next, we talk with a listener on the toll-free line, Line 4 in Bloomington, Illinois. Hi.
Hi there. I need for you guys to tell me that my dog is still going to love me if I quit giving her table scraps and dog food.
Your dog will live a lot longer to love you.
I know. I keep telling myself that.
Yeah.
It's just almost impossible. She sits right beside me and, you know, gives me her abused dog look.
Right.
Don't give her some.
Yeah. What you can do... we have
the
friends.
Dog doesn't love you because you give it.
Yeah.
Believe me, they grow to expect it, and if you don't give it, then they get angry. But it's not like they love you because you're doing it.
Yeah,
not retaliatory. She just gives me that sad.
Yeah, that pathetic look.
Yeah. Well, in our family, I'm the one that does that because Robin yells at, "You're just training them to beg at the table." But I can't resist them. They're so cute.
He gives them popcorn all the time, and then they sit in front of him and drool, and he can't figure out why they do that. But
well, tell me then, how do you keep from doing that?
Steel yourself to the gaze and give her a treat when you're done eating, or put her out if you can't stand it. Put her out outside or in another room.
Hey, that's a good idea. I hadn't thought of that.
I just find if you can avoid the situation altogether, even put her in another room with something that she likes, like a particularly nice chew bone, or what we suggest with dogs that are obese, and Malamutes tend to get obese very easily because they're so food-oriented. And that is to give them healthy things like carrots or rice cakes.
Mm-hmm.
Those are things that have very few calories. The dogs really like to chew on them. They're crunchy, and they don't give them any calories. But if you put her in another room with something she likes while you're eating, then when you're done eating, you can reward her with, a little rice cake or something like that so that she knows she was a good girl.
You can also make her work for it. For example, if you can't put her in another room, just put her on a long down. And if she stays down, then you could give her a treat, not from the table scraps. As Robin said, get some other treats handy that are more dog appropriate. And
you're assuming my dog knows what down means.
Well, that's where you have to start. That's why I say you make the dog work. You just don't give I forgot who said it. There's no such thing as a free lunch, kid. You want a treat, you're going to have to do something for it. And train her to sit. I mean, sit is okay. I'm just suggesting, make her do something for the food instead of just sitting there watching you.
Well, one other question. Do you know about doggy treats? Are there some that are not quite as fattening as others? I assume they're all full of calories.
No, actually, the dog food companies have thought of this already. They've gotten a step ahead, and they do make treats they're called less active. I know Iams makes a biscuit that's for less active, so it's a lower calorie dog biscuit. And your local pet store, feed store, I'm sure would have some good suggestions for lower calorie doggy treats.
You think she'd be just as happy with those as she is with her bacon strips?
They really don't know.
Our dogs are just happy if I give them a whole cookie or if I break it in half. They go, "Oh, thank you."
That's a good idea, too. She probably couldn't tell the difference.
No, I don't think they can. Right. They're just happy to get something.
Okay. Well, listen, I thank you guys.
Sure. Good luck.
Hope I win this battle.
Right.
Bye-bye.
Let's talk with another listener. Caller on line 2 in Champaign. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I have kind of an odd question. I am not a dog owner, but I live in a house that's two different, apartments, and my neighbor's a dog owner. And I'm actually looking for a behavior modification for a dog that's not mine. Basically, my problem, I've tried to address this with the owner, and it doesn't seem to work, but we have a large bush in the front yard that's right outside my windows of my living room, and instead of taking the dog in the back to get its job done, she occasionally takes it into the front yard right outside my windows. And, well, it's not so bad in the wintertime. In the summertime, that nice odor of, you know, dog business is not so great. So I'm curious if there's something I could put in under the bush that might make it less palatable for the dog to want to go there.
I saw on this old house, the guys that visit, I forgot what that's called.
Ask this old house.
Thank you. And there's a, this is, I'm not recommending this, but it's a sprayer with a motion detector on it. It's meant to keep deer away from the bushes. But you put that out, as soon as the dog comes up, you know, the hose starts.
Something that might be more neighbor friendly.
No, wait. There was a training technique for aggressive dogs where the person with the aggressive dog would have it sitting outside. They'd bring another dog in, and if the aggressive dog did anything, the guy was supposed to, you know, correct it and say no. And the instructor who was telling us this said, after three times, if the guy didn't get the timing down, oh, and what they would do is throw water on the dog.
Oh.
And the fourth time, if the guy didn't do it right, they throw water on the handler.
There you go.
And so I'm suggesting, the problem is it with the dog here?
No, yeah, I mean, I don't have any issues. If the dog's good, I just feel bad because the owner keeps taking him right outside my window. And
yeah,
it's, especially on a hot day, it can be a
little... Yeah, is it, it's more urination, I assume, than
yeah.
defecation? Okay.
Note that, FCC.
There are products that you can get at the pet store that you can spray on the bush that are supposed to make it not attractive for dogs to pee on. I've not tried those products, so I don't know how useful they are, but they've been marketing them for some time. So you might try that. That's a very low low level of avoidance. But if the dog doesn't want to pee on the thing, then maybe the owner will take it elsewhere so it will pee on something else.
We have a large backyard, so it's not like, you know, there's no place else to go.
Right. And so if the dog smells that smell and bypasses that particular bush, then they keep going and hopefully go on a bush that's further away.
You can also put a fence around it.
Yes, I'm just looking. I guess I'm looking for owner modifications.
Exactly. Well, the dog has to go, and the owner is saying, "Here's where you go," and that's where the dog goes. Mm-hmm. So it's the owner's problem. You might, as I said, get a hose and spray the owner and say, "Oops, I meant to spray your dog. Sorry."
Right. Just sit by the window with the lights out, the screen out, and.
Or you could start keeping bees and put your hive out right by the.
Do you share the landlord? I mean, do you have the same landlord?
Yeah, we had other issues, and she had several dogs at the beginning, and apparently I wasn't the only one that complained. It was, and I felt bad because it wasn't really the dog. It was the fact that the dog was home alone all the time, and it barked nonstop when she wasn't home. And when she was home, it wouldn't bark, so she was kind of surprised that so many people complained, but I live on a street where there's about two dozen dogs, and every time a dog would walk by, the dog would go nuts upstairs. And, you know, there's only so much of that you could take in an evening. You know, 5 hours of nonstop barking is a little ridiculous, and I think it shows that the dog's a little stressed out, too, you know.
Definitely.
So, but now there's just the one dog, and it's a small problem, and I thought maybe I'd try and take care of it myself.
Yeah.
In a little non-discreet way or indiscreet way.
Yeah. But you have chatted with the owner, and they're just not willing to take the dog another bush or two beyond your window?
She agrees to, and then it doesn't happen. So. She's very polite at the time, and yeah, sure, not a problem. And
you could get her a shock collar.
And zap her from inside.
And zap her, yeah. It's inhumane to use it on a dog, but no one ever said anything about using it on a human.
I know. I mean, I know leaving terse little notes is not considered real friendly, but maybe just a little sign in front of the bush saying...
Trespassers will be shot.
Saying, you know...
Where?
Yeah, like with the doggy, you know, the no cross with the little dog on it. Or put a little sign there, this has been treated with something, you know.
Oh, there you go.
I know people who don't want dogs on their lawn often put the signs out saying it's been chemically treated when it hasn't been, but that they figure the neighborhood dogs' owners will keep the dogs off that yard.
They think the dogs can read.
You know. The owners who are walking their dogs will keep the dogs off.
That's a great idea, because I could say that bugs were coming in from, because it's right up against the house.
And that you put something on
there. Bugs, so I sprayed it.
Sounds like the kind of dog odor that doesn't care if your dog gets poisoned, though.
Well, I don't know. I just, I feel like I've gone as far as I can with the owner, so I thought maybe I'd try something on the fly that might make her do it anyway.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for your advice.
You could get a big dog of your own. Just leave him out there.
Right by the bush.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thank you.
Let's talk with another listener. Another caller in Bloomington, Illinois. Line 3, hi.
Hi, this is a great show. Got a couple questions. My wife and I are going puppy shopping this weekend. We contacted some people through the local newspaper, and that we're looking at getting a yellow lab female. And I guess I wanted to know what sort of should we look for in temperament of the puppies, because all the puppies are still with the mother. They won't be released for another 3 weeks. And they're all AKC registered, at least according to the ad and stuff. And both of the ads that we're going to go visit say the parents are on site and parents are great with children. But I know that puppies can kind of vary within a breed. And then after that, I'm wondering, what's your opinion on crate training? We've done a lot of research on that.
First of all, with Labrador Retrievers, they're very active dogs and strong, and they can be stubborn. So you want to make sure when you visit, make sure that you can meet the parents and that they are sweet. The mother dog, even if she's still nursing puppies, can be brought out so that you can pet her away from her puppies. Most mother dogs aren't too protective after the first couple of weeks anyway.
Okay.
If they're field-bred labs, then they're going to be more active than they are if they're what we call bench-bred or show labs. So depending upon the lines the people have, if you're likely to get a more hyper dog from
in a field-bred
in a field-bred dog, because they're bred to run in the field all day. Whereas the show or bench bred ones are bred to stand there and look pretty. So they're not as active.
Well, we're going to get phone calls on that.
For a pet puppy, I always recommend that people go to, unless they're a hunter themselves or they have lots of space for the dog to run and are willing to commit a lot of time for exercise, I recommend people go to more of the show bench lines than the field lines, just if you just want a pet.
Okay.
And you want a laid-back puppy. You know, you want a dog that's more comfortable just sitting around. If it's the dog that's busy, going to everybody, running from pillar to post, I would not pick that puppy. I would pick the one that might be sitting there watching the situation and not interacting quite so much and then being a little bit slower to approach, especially if you have small kids.
Okay, we don't have them yet, but that's something that may be coming up the next few years.
You want a more laid-back personality rather than that a little more hyper, you know, unless you really want a dog that's that active.
Not really. I mean, our schedules work out where I work more during the day and my wife teaches at the university and works more in the late afternoon, early evening. So the dog, you know, in the first few months won't go more than an hour or two without anyone being there. We have a good friend of ours who, if we have some overlap time, he can come over and watch the dog. But and we'd read a lot about crate training and stuff in terms of, you know, when the dog is, you know, goes to bed, has a place to go to. We're wondering if you know anything about that or what
Definitely recommend crate training. And it's one of the best things you can do when you're raising your dog, because that way you can take it with you everywhere when it's an adult, if it's willing to stay in a crate, because you can take it traveling with you in a crate. And you're welcome at most motels, all kinds of things like that. You can take it up with you in hot weather because you can open your car doors and windows when you get places because the dog's confined in the crate. The crate should never be used as punishment. There's a lot of good books on crate training, and it's if you start from day one, that this is where the puppy goes to bed, this is where the puppy goes to eat, this is where the puppy goes when you're not home, that most dogs take to it very quickly. It's their den, their safe place. And I would buy a crate that's going to be big enough for your dog when it's full grown.
That's what they recommended. Then they said, what, when you have it as a puppy, to block off part of it so
you
it only has room to turn around?
We've never really needed to do that with our guys, because I find even in the small, even in a larger crate, it's confined enough that our dogs typically don't want to go potty in there if they can help it. They learn to hold going to the bathroom until you let them out. Make sure they're exercised and that there's access to water, that they're well exercised before they are put in the crate, and that they have access to water while they're in the crate, usually if you leave them there during the day.
Right. And you said also feed them in the crate as well?
I like to feed ours in the crate because that gets them to the point where they love their crate. You know, they will run in it and stand there with the door open for half an hour waiting for us to give them their biscuit or their dinner. And they, you know, that's their good spot. So especially if you have one that's a little reluctant, I would feed it in the crate with the door open. And that way then they get used to the fact that they can go in and out, and it's positive, very positive thing.
You might also want to seriously consider a rescue lab. It would be a little older. Its temperament would be a little better known. It's probably already housebroken.
Okay.
What you're describing is a situation where the dog may be left alone for a long period of time.
No.
If there's overlap time, somebody's going to come in. But
yeah, we have in the overlap time, it'd only be 2 days a week, depending on how my wife teaches in the semester. But we made sure that the dog probably wouldn't go more than 2 to 2.5 hours without somebody being there, and that would be about the.
Robin's going, oh no, but I would. Yeah. It's hard enough raising a puppy without it being gone long periods of time. And with older dogs, they're a little more used to it.
Right. And the upcoming summer semester, she's not teaching as much. So there's actually the first 3 to 4 months, there's going to be a greater, or 3 months, mm-hmm. there's going to be a greater stretch of time where somebody will be with the dog. And this probably won't start till September, beginning of September is when we'll have the 2 to 3 hour spread of the dog being alone.
Yeah, that would be fine. Up to 4 to 6 hours in a crate, I don't think is a problem for a puppy. They certainly learn to stay there overnight, usually for 6 or 8 hours, pretty readily. And I like to have the crate in the bedroom for the first couple of weeks. If you can find a friend who has a small crate that you can borrow when the puppy's little to have in the bedroom, assuming that's where the dog is going to sleep.
Some books had said you could keep the crate like in a living room area, and then when you go to bed at night, bring it upstairs. But then there were some books that said it's not good to change the location of the crate. So
I've not found it a problem to change the location, but it's just a pain to have to lug it around if it's a fairly decent sized crate, which for a lab it's going to be.
Yeah, it is a pretty big one.
If you've got a friend who might have a little, pet carrier, the much more portable little ones, that's fine for sleeping in overnight, even though it's fairly small. Often when people locally buy a puppy from us, we'll give them one of our little puppy crates, and they'll keep it in there for the first month or two in the bedroom, and that way the dog can be in the bedroom but confined, and then they have their big crate in the main part of the house.
Okay, great. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate the advice.
Sure.
Okay, thanks for the call. And we've used up the time. We've got one last caller we won't be able to take this afternoon. I'm really sorry. We'll do the show again, though, next month, the first Friday of May, here on the Afternoon Magazine. We'll talk about dogs once again. This is the Afternoon Magazine, and Jim and Robin, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon. And let's mention the open house one more time before we go.
It's the Vet Med Open House. It's not the Dog Training Club Open
right.
House, but it's at the University on South Lincoln, the Vet Med School and the School of Animal Sciences. There are going to be a lot of exhibits, and the Dog Training Club will give one as well.
at 10:30.
Very good. Thank you very much. Have a great afternoon. And
thank you.
Jim, we'll see you next month.
Well, maybe not, if Robin replaces me.
Senior correspondent, Jim Keel. This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580. I'm Celeste Quinn. It's 9 minutes before 2 o'clock Central Time. Todd Gleason is standing by with settlement prices from the Chicago Board of Trade.
Indeed, I am, Celeste, from the Board of Trade this afternoon. Another update for both the corn and the beans. The wheat was higher as well. Corn futures making new contract highs today. That after the bullish release of the USDA crop prospective plantings reports and grain stocks report on Wednesday afternoon, two big trading sessions followed by a third today. Futures in the corn pit anywhere between 4 and 7 cents higher, 7 3/4 higher actually in that December contract for the new harvest. But let's begin in the wheat pit where we always do for the day. The May futures 4.18 1/2 the high, the low at 4.06 1/2, and the May wheat settled at 4.16 1/4. It was up 5 3/4 on the day. July futures 4.24 1/2 the high, the low at 4.13. Settlement price there at 4.23 3/4, and they finished 7 higher. September contract in the wheat, 4.27 1/2 the high, the low at 4.17 1/2. A settlement price, 4.26 1/4, up 5 1/4. And Deese wheat, 4.35 in the futures on the high, the low at 4.24. Settlement price at 4.34 3/4, up 5 3/4 on the day. The March wheat futures, 4.36 the high, the low at 4.27. A settlement price at 4.36, up 3. From the Board of Trade corn pit, the May contract, 3.31 1/4 the high, the low at 3.25 1/2. A settlement price, 3.30 1/2, up 4 3/4 on the day. July futures, 3.37 1/2 the high, the low at 3.31 1/2. A settlement, 3.37. They were up a nickel. September futures, 3.36 the high, the low at 3.29. A settlement price at 3.35 1/4, up 6 1/4. And December futures, new contract highs there as well. 3.35 1/2 the high, the low at 3.26 1/2. A settlement price at 3.34 1/4, up 7 3/4 in the harvest month December contract for the corn. March futures now, 3.36 1/2 the high, the low at 3.28. A settlement price at 3.34 1/2, up 7 1/4. And May corn, 3.36 1/2 high, low at 3.29. A settlement price, 3.35 3/4, up 7 1/2 cents. July futures for 05, 3.36 1/2 the high, the low at 3.29. A settlement price at 3.35 3/4, up 7 1/2 cents. 2 years out for the December contract, 2.78 the high, the low at 2.75. The 2005 December corn contract settled 2.77. It finished 2 cents higher on the day. May oats now, 1.78 3/4 the high, the low at 1.75. A settlement at 1.77 3/4, down 1. And July futures up 1/4, 1.84 3/4 the high, the low at 1.81. A settlement for the July oats at 1.83 3/4. Once again, they settled up 1/4 for the day. From the soy complex, May futures in the bean pit at 10.46 on the high, the low at 10.25 1/2. A settlement price, 10.45 1/2. They finished 16 cents higher. July futures, 10.45 the high, the low at 10.23. A settlement price at 10.43 3/4, up 16 1/2. August soybeans now, 9.93 the high, the low at 9.74 1/2. A settlement price at 9.91 1/2. They were up 17 in September futures, 13 higher. 8.75 the high, the low at 8.59. A settlement price at 8.69 for the SEPs, up 13 cents. November beans, 7.86 the high, the low at 7.68 1/2. A settlement price, 7.84 1/2, up 18 1/2 in the January contract. 7.86 the high, the low at 7.70. Settlement price at 7.85 1/2. They finished 19 1/2 higher. March futures in the bean pit, 7.76 the high, the low at 7.59 1/2. And a settlement at 7.76, 18 higher for the day. May bean meal 3.37 on the high, the low at 3.27.50. A settlement price at 3.36. They were up 6.60 on the day. July bean meal 3.35, the high, the low at 3.26. A settlement 3.34.50. They were up 8 even. May bean oil 32.95 for the high, the low at 32.18. A settlement price at 32.64, down 13. And July bean oil 32.85 for the high, the low at 32.06. A settlement price at 32.65, down 5 for the day. Don't forget to join us at 6 after the hour of 2 o'clock this afternoon Central Standard Time, when we'll talk with Mike Zuzolo of Risk Management Commodities out of Chalmers, Indiana. We'll take in the week's trade and all these new contract highs in the corn pit and what the USDA had to release on Wednesday morning with Mike, not only this afternoon, but tomorrow morning at 11:30 a.m. on Commodity Week. Mike will be coming into the studio when we talk to John Bondurant, our guest. Be sure to tune in for both of those programs. Now here's Celeste Quinn with the numbers from the Mercantile Exchange.
Thank you, Todd. It was a higher day today for cattle, while lean hogs finished lower.
April feeder cattle, 89.65 the high, 88.95 the low, 89.40 the settlement, that up 7.5. May, 86.95 the high, 86.10 the low, 86.20 the settlement, that down 22.5. August, 87 even the high, 86.30 the low, 86.95 the settlement, that up 47.5. April live cattle, 80 even the high, 79.10 the low, 79.95 the settlement, that up 85. June, 76.40 the high, 75.32.5 the low, 75.72.5 the settlement, that up 7.5. August, 75.85 the high, 74.80 the low, the settlement 75.35, that up 20. October live cattle, 77.37.5 the high, 76.65 the low, 77 even the settlement, that up 10. April lean hog, 64.95 the high, 63.90 the low, 64.17.5 the settlement, that down 112.5. May lean hogs, 67.15 the high, 66.10 the low, finishing at 66.87.5, down 82.5. June lean hogs, 73.95 the high, 72.70 the low, the settlement 72.80, that down 160. July lean hogs, today's high 70.70, the low 69.80, the settlement 70.65, that down 27.5. May pork bellies, 108.70 the high, 107.35 the low, 108.15 the settlement, that up 5. The Dow Jones Industrial Average is up 54 points at 10,428. The NASDAQ stands at 2046, up 31 points. And the S&P 500 is up 5 at 1137.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Grainfield Marketing in Normal. Grainfield Marketing can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at grainfield.com. Today's programming is made possible in part by a grant from Birkenstock Concepts by Heel to Toe in downtown Urbana. For over 25 years, offering all sizes and widths of Birkenstocks, from clogs and sandals to work, dress, and sport shoes. Birkenstock Concepts offers repair and modification services and a certified podorthist and orthotist on staff.
It's time once again to Ask Dr. Science. So let's ask Dr. Science.
That's me.
Remember, he knows more than you do.
That's right.
Carrie Smith Moorman from Carlinville, Illinois, writes, "Dear Dr. Science, since helium is lighter than air, does a helium tank get lighter or heavier as you empty it?"
A helium tank is actually a vacuum of sorts that sucks the heaviness out of things. So when a helium tank is connected to a balloon, it's merely removing the heaviness from the balloon. Now, the law of conservation of energy and mass demands that heaviness has to go somewhere, and it goes into the tank. When you return the tank to the chemical supply shop, they sell that heaviness to record companies, where it's used to give substance to popular music. People who handle such heaviness must wear rubber gloves because absorbing heaviness through the skin can result in depression, already a natural consequence of working with popular culture in any form.
Thank you, Dr. Science.